at an interesting, obviously an interesting parsha, really the beginning of monotheism. I'm going to mute a little bit here. I'm getting some background noise. And you know how to unmute by this point. After 7 months, I hope you do at least. So we have Lech Lecha, the beginning of monotheism, Avram Avinu. The truth is that we already had a little bit of a taste of Avram Avinu in the end of last week's parsha. Of course, I left my chumash upstairs, but we already had a taste of Avram Avinu in last week's parsha. But this is the parsha that people know Avram Avinu for. And what's interesting is that while we don't know necessarily about Avram Avinu's connection to Hashem at the beginning of the parsha, although the Midrash, as I just pointed out, picks up on the end of the last week's parsha, the end of Noach, where he talked about it, all of a sudden, the beginning of our parsha, the beginning of Lech Lecha, this Avram character, who we just recently introduced in very mundane ways, at least based on the Psukim, right? That Terach took Avram, his son, and Haran, and Sarai, and they went to Canaan, or they went towards Canaan, and then they got to Haran. And then all of a sudden we have the beginning of this week's parsha. Vayomer Hashem al Avram. All of a sudden Hashem is speaking to Avram. Who's Avram? Doesn't really say. Doesn't really say. It's an interesting question that a lot of Mefarshim and a lot of the philosophers, the Baalei Machshava, try to figure out who is Avram to Hashem at this point. Why is it that he gets chosen in such a specific task to go to Israel? If I'm not mistaken, I think I've heard from the Abarbanel that maybe the Lech Lecha was actually given to many people. Maybe the Sfas also talks about this, that Lech Lecha was a task that anybody could have done. It's just that Avram Avinu was the one to actually take him up on it. What exactly does that mean, and how exactly does that manifest in the real world? I'm not sure, but it is interesting to note. I'll have to look up the Sfas later. That Avram, while from the surface level, doesn't have any existing relationship with Hashem, there's something that must have happened, that something Hashem must have seen, something about Avram Avinu that prompted Hashem to reach out to him. So either way, he's asked, Lech Lecha
me'artzecha. He was already 75 years old.
Yeah, he was also older.
He was already 75 years old. It wasn't the beginning of his life.
Right, no, it's not the beginning of his life, but it's the beginning of the narration of his life. We don't really know much about him besides the fact that his father brought him towards Canaan. So now we're sort of just left, you know, with this gap. As you're saying, according to the Midrash, the story with the idols takes place when he's 40 years old, and now you're saying he's 75. So then there's a bunch of years there that we just don't know what happened. But either way, what we do also know, based on the Pesukim at the beginning of the Parsha, is that Hashem tells him to go to Eretz Yisrael. He gives him these sort of guarantees that he's going to become a wealthy person, he's going to have bracha, and then he takes what we call this es hanefesh asher asu b'charan. He takes the nefesh asher asu b'charan. So whatever has already transpired, Chazal understand that hanefesh asher asu b'charan means that he took with him converts that he had brought into Judaism, that he had already talked about Hashem. He'd already come to the conclusion about who Hashem was, about the importance of monotheism as opposed to idol worship. And he had already brought many people into this fold to teach them how to be servants of Hashem. So even though Hashem is only reaching out explicitly at this stage, Avram has already somehow created this relationship with Hashem himself and also with other people to bring them closer to Hashem. Again, Chazal fills in the gaps here, but we don't have much in terms of the surface level understanding of what actually transpired. So it's interesting. Last year we spoke about the Midrash at the end of Noach, the transition to the Midrash at the beginning of Lech Lecha in terms of fire. If you remember the connection between how Nimrod tested Avram through the fire, and how Avram at the beginning of this week's parsha, the Midrash tells us, saw a burning building on fire, and what that represents in terms of, you know, using fire to illuminate or using fire to destroy. And it's really up to the individual to make that decision and to make the most of the opportunity that they're given. That's what we talked about last year. But to this year, we're going to talk about the continuation of the parsha, right? So Avram goes and he actually gets to Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, however, there's a famine and he leaves Eretz Yisrael. It's a big machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban here about whether or not he was supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban actually says that this is actually a challenge or was a test that Avram failed at. If you look at Rav Hirsch, just coincidentally, I've happened to be looking through the parsha with Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch has what I had a high school rebbe call he used to call this piece in Rav Hirsch a pocket Hirsch. I don't know why. I mean, I know why he called it that, because it's the type of Rav Hirsch you should always carry with you in your pocket. This is Rav Hirsch. I don't know if people have commentaries of Rav Hirsch in their homes, but this is definitely a keeper and something which I think really goes a long way in the generation we live in, where he says, I'll just read it to you here now that I have it open. Even if we are incapable of explaining the strange events in this story, even if we are forced to conclude as the Ramban concludes, Avram Avinu chata chet gadol b'shkaga, he inadvertently committed a grave sin. Nevertheless, none of this would perplex us. The Torah does not seek to portray our great men as perfectly ideal figures. It deifies no man. It says of no one, here you have the ideal, and this man, the divine, assumes human form. It does not set before us the life of any one person as the model from which we might learn what is good and right, what we must do and what we must refrain from doing. When the Torah wishes to put before us a model to emulate, it does not present a man who is born of dust. Rather, God presents himself as the model, saying, look at me, look at my ways. We are never to say, this must be good and right because so-and-so did it, right? That's not how we determine what's good and what's bad. Because so-and-so did it, that means it must be good. The same thing is true with Avram Avinu. And then he says, this is sort of the kicker for Avram Avinu. The Torah does not hide from us. The Torah does not hide from us the faults, errors, and weaknesses of our great men. And this is precisely what gives its stories credibility. The knowledge given us of their faults and weaknesses does not detract from the stature of our great man. On the contrary, it adds to their stature and makes their life stories even more instructive. Rav Hirsch goes on to explain even more that the fact that Avram Avinu made a mistake means that we can learn from Avram Avinu. It's not to be said that if Avram did it, then we have to do it because Avram did it. We have to do things because Hashem says to do them. But it is to teach us, how do we learn from making mistakes? How can we relate to other people who do make mistakes? So the fact that the Ramban says here that Avram Avinu made a mistake by going down to Mitzrayim instead of staying in Eretz Yisrael is itself instructive to us that even if we make mistakes, we can still be like Avram Avinu. Very powerful Rav Hirsch. That everyone, I guess I just read most of it, but a very important one to look over. You might be familiar with, you know, modern day, you know, Gedolim stories. I'm not going to call out any specific publishers by name, but you know what I'm talking about. Stories about Gedolim, how everything's so flowery and they never made mistakes, and some controversies that might have come up about biographies that you might be familiar with in terms of. You know, making a more real or practical picture of who the person was. Either way, not for us to discuss now, but I remember one psychologist at YU, I don't know if he was a rabbi, he said that one of the most problematic biographies he's ever read is a biography about Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, right? The Michtav Mieliyahu, which I believe David Tenenbaum was teaching about. Recently he's switched, I think he's doing it now, I don't remember, maybe Blanche knows better, but I think he's talking about Michtav Mieliyahu now, and one of the biographies of Rav Eliyahu Dessler starts something along the lines of Eliyahu Dessler was born on the top of a mountain. All of his teachers, and he was a prodigy when he was born, basically. Like, he was born as a perfect being, right, at the top of the mountain already. So he I remember he talked about how that's such a problematic mentality to promote the great people of our generation as people who were sort of divinely, you know, already propped up, and there's nothing that they had to do to work at it. Because when we see people that have mistakes and see people that are actual humans, so then we know that we can also become great. Either way, not for now. But then we go on Avram and Lot have to separate because they have some contention. We have the story of Paro and taking Sarai and the lie that Avram feels he needs to make in order to save his life, to save her life. That was out of order, but either way, Avram and Lot then separate. Lot goes to his way towards Sodom, which we'll pick up in next week's Parsha, but for now, continues on to talking Ash Hashem and Avram talking, and then there's the story of the four and the five kings. And that really starts at the beginning of Perek Yud Daled, which is, we're going to focus on the aftermath of that story. Vayhibi me'am arafel, am rafel mel shin'ar. Aryov melch el asar, kedar la omer melch ol elom, v'tit al melch goyim. Right, so you got these four kings. They made a war with Bera melch Sodom, Birsha melch Amora, Shinav melch Adam Hashem, Ever melch Tzvoyim, and melch Belahit Zoar. So they've got four or five kings. They're fighting together. Ultimately, although it's a little unclear, they take Lot as captive, and Ash Avram hears about it. He said, "Vayarikas chanichav." It's a very interesting word, chanichav. There, no one here, I think, was in our Sunday morning Piazetsna Rebbe class, but he talks about this word in his introduction, I believe, and how instrumental it is to understand. At least Rashi's interpretation of this word chanichav, the kids that he had inaugurated into their life mission. It's interesting to talk about, not for now also. Either way, Avram Avinu helps out with the war, and then they start to rejoice together, right? And this is where we'll pick up in the sources. Well, there's a whole thing with Malki Tzedek, and they have a meal together. Vayvarcheo vayomar baruch Avram lekelayon. That blessed is Avram to the God on high, Konei Shemayim V'aretz. It's interesting, last year we spoke about him on Shabbos afternoon, just going through the parsha, there's so much to talk about again. Last year we talked about on Shabbos afternoon this pasuk, in terms of the halachic ramifications of blessing a person before blessing Hashem. Right? So the question was, can you say L'chaim before you say the bracha of Borei Pirei Gafen? Right? Which comes first? Right, when you have a l'chaim to make, do you make the bracha and then say, and then drink a little bit and then say l'chaim, or can you say l'chaim and then say the bracha? And it might be based on, some of the posts can point out, it's based on this pasuk that maybe Malki Tzedek was punished for saying these words Baruch Avram. Well, I think the Gemara says he was punished Baruch Avram, and then he says Hashem is Konei Shemayim Va'aretz, and that's the wrong order. Really, he should have said Konei, he should have blessed Hashem first, and then he should have taken, you know, a bracha for Avram Avinu. Baruch Kelayon, Asher Migin, Tzarech, B'yadech, V'yitin L'maaser Mikol. Right? And he gave a little bit to Hashem. Fine. That's the end of Revi. And we're going to pick up now with the beginning of Chamishi. Vayomer Melech Sodom El Avram. This is the beginning of the source sheet here in source number one. Pasuk Chaf Aleph of Perek Yud Daled, 14:21. Vayomer Melech Sodom El Avram, right? So the king of Sodom, also on that side, who's thanking Avram for helping them in the war. Tein li hanefesh v'arachush kach lach. Give me the people, whoever those people are, and take all the possessions for yourself. Vayomer Avram El Melech Sodom. And Avram says to the king of Sodom, Harimosi yadi el Hashem kel elyon. I lift up my hand towards Hashem, the God of Most High, Konei Shemayim V'aretz, the owner of heaven and earth, really just repeating the words of Malki Tzedek, which is interesting. And he says the following to Melech Sodom, Im michut v'ad sroch na'al, from a thread to a shoelace, v'im ekach mikol ha'shalach, if I would take anything from you, v'lo tomar ani ha'asharti et Avram. I don't want anyone to say that I don't want you to say that I made Avram wealthy, right? Avram knows he has a reputation. He doesn't want anything to go back to Melchizedek as sort of his doing, right? He doesn't want him to take any credit for creating the person that is Avram Avinu. So he says, I'm not going to take a thread or even a shoelace, not even the smallest little thing. I'm not going to take that from you. Bil Adai Rak Asher Achlu Hanarim Vechelik Hanashim Asher Alchaliti Aner Eshko Umamre Heim Yichu Chalkam. Far be it from me. That's how it translates it here, according to Rav Hirsch. Only that which the people have eaten and the share of the men who have accompanied me, Aner Eshko and Mamre, they may take their share. But Avram Avinu himself is not going to take anything. So if you look at the Gemara, Rashi quotes part of this Gemara a little bit, but if you look at the Gemara in source number 2, Gemara in Sota, which was itself featured, well, implicitly featured in our bulletin last week as the Kasha of the week. So the Gemara says there, Gemara in Sota, Yud Zayin, Darash Rava. Rava says, Bishar Sha'amar Avram Avinu, because Avram Avinu said, interesting, he's not yet Avraham, but that's how the Gemara talks about him. Avraham Avinu, im michut v'yatzroch nal, because he said, I will not take even a thread or a shoelace, zachu banav, his descendants merited two very important mitzvahs. L'mitzvah schut shel techeles, right, the blue string of the techeles on tzitzis, and the ritzua shel tefillin, and the strap of tefillin. It's a very interesting line, that the thread and the shoelace represent, number one, the thread of tzitzis, and the straps of tefillin. So you're going to say to me, what does that have to do with the other, right? So a thread and a thread, that makes sense. But tefillin and a shoelace, what is the connection between tefillin and a shoelace? Those two things seem to be different, at least in their functionality. Right, tefillin is something we wrap around our arms to remember. Kibiyat Chazakot Tzi Hashem Akenim Mitzrayim, or Laman Tiyat Torah Hashem Beficha. Different reasons given in the Torah for why we wear tefillin, but the shoelace is just to tie your shoe. There's no mitzvah involved in that. It's not put around your arm. Now it is, as you probably know, it is in some ways a similar binding process. So maybe that's connected. It's also sort of a long and thin material, right? So that's what the Gemara says is the connection. There is an interesting, another connection. Does anyone know another connection? I don't know how easy it is to talk about on Zoom. Does anyone know another connection between the tefillin and shoelaces? Anyone know another connection between tefillin and shoelaces? Not in Tanakh, but in practice. A connection between tefillin and shoelaces. I know there are not many people here that have any much experience.
They're made out of leather.
What was that?
They're both made out of leather. They're both made out of leather.
Potentially. I guess a shoelace could be made out of leather. Back then, probably it was somewhat the case that they were made out of leather. But nowadays, surely they're not, at least not predominantly. So what other connection, not, and I'll get a little closer with my hints here, not in a narrative or thematic way, but rather in a halachic way. There's a halachic connection between tefillin and shoelaces. Does anyone know? I know there's not a lot of a...
Tie your right shoe first.
Good, sure
enough. Because you put a left and a right in your right hand, did you put the left tefillin on, you know, I mean, you put tefillin on you and the shoelace... So you're saying you have to put it on your shoes on the same way, but if you were the opposite handed, would you do it the other way?
Okay, it's a good question. So let's look at source number 3. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, Azda Rabbi Yochanan Tame, Da'am Rabbi Yochanan Ketfilin Kach Minalin. Just like your tefillin, that's how you should wrap your, you should tie your shoes. Ma tefillin bismol, af minalin bismol. What does that mean, bismol? So Mesvik, you know, no shall yamin, ba'achach no shall shmol. So the Gemara goes through a different, somewhat of a back and forth as to the veracity of that claim, Rabbi Yochanan. Amr of Nach Mar Yitzchak Yarei Shemaim Yotzei Deishnayan. In the end of the day, we should compromise and do like both of these opinions. Umanu Mar Bredra Avina. Hechi Avid. How would he do? Sayim Dimine. He would put on his right shoe. Velo Katar. But he wouldn't tie it. Visayim Dismale Vikatar. Then he would put on his left shoe and he would tie it. Vahadar Katar Dimine. Rav Ashi says he doesn't care how you put your shoes on, but we paskin like this first opinion, that when you put your shoes on and your shoes have laces, you put your right shoe on, and then you put your left shoe on, and then you tie your left, and then you tie your right. And the reason is because, first of all, we always, in Judaism, we always follow the right. The right is a symbol of strength, the right is a symbol of how Hashem does things, or where Hashem's presence is, and therefore we always start with the right, with one exception. Anything that has to do with binding, with wrapping something, whether that means your tefillin, or whether that means your shoe, or whether that means, according to some, putting on zippers, or putting on buttons. Some will say that you actually do buttons on your left first also, because that's a binding movement too. So for instance, some poskim say, you know, this only, very rarely comes up, because your buttons are usually only on in one dimension, right? They're in the middle. But the truth is that, for me at least, I have relatively big hands, and my cuffs, I can never get my hand outside of my cuff. So I have to actually, every time I take my shirt off, I take off my cuffs. So I always unbutton my cuffs. So when I get dressed in the morning, I button my left cuff first, and then my right cuff. Because of this, because the left always comes first when you bind things together. Even if buttoned. Now, I don't think most people require, say that's an obligation to bind it. That's sort of like a chumrah, I think the Achronim came up with that, I remember reading once. But either way, when it comes to shoes, this is definitely how we paskin. This is definitely how we paskin. If you have shoes with laces, so you lace up your left first and then your right, even though you would put your shoe on the right first. And that's based on this Gemara.
What about left-handed people?
Okay, so good. It's a great question. And this we talked about last year, Pasha's Vayigash, when we talked about taking three steps back for Shmona Esrei. Which foot do you take back, do you go back with first? Which foot do you step forward with first? And usually the rule is that the left is weakness or apprehension, and the right is strength or anticipation. So when you take your steps forward for Shmona Esrei, you want to start with your right foot. When you take your steps back for Shmona Esrei, when you're finished, so you take it with your left foot, because you want to say, I don't want to leave Hashem, right? You want to show a discomfort with leaving Hashem. So when you take your three steps back, we paskin that you take your left foot first. And the poskim discuss and disagree about, well, what about a lefty? If a lefty feels that his right foot is more weak, so should he take his right foot back? So this is actually machlokas poskim about what to do. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I believe for that, we say that you take your right foot back. You put your right foot back first if you're a lefty. However, when it comes to other things, so it's not as clear. So for instance, when a lefty does mitzvahs, so typically I think the lefty will do things with his left hand. So for instance, for a lulav, I think the lefty picks up a lulav with his left hand and holds the esrog with his right hand, as opposed to a righty who holds the lulav in his right hand, as opposed to the lefty who holds in the left hand. So when it comes to this, so the question really becomes, well, how strong is the connection between the shoe and the tefillin? And this is actually very informative. There's an interesting diuk based on Rashi on this Gemara, who says that the significance of the left hand is based on Yad Keha, as opposed to being based on how you write. And therefore, some explain that maybe for this, you should put on your shoes in the always using the right and then the left, because it's a reference of universal strength versus universal weakness. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that we actually follow, I'm not 100% sure, and the post can disagree about it. So it's not like one of those things that you have a very strong opinion one way or the other. But I believe a lefty would do it the opposite. No, what's interesting, when I say opposite, I don't mean opposite completely. I think, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember this correctly, a lefty would put on their right shoe first. Would put on their right shoe first, because the right is a universal strength, not a personal strength, right? Right is a representative of Hashem's strength. And that way, right, the right foot is still the universal strength for a lefty, even though the lefty personally doesn't find that the right foot is strength. But when they would tie their shoes, so then they would tie it with their right first, because for them, they tie their tefillin on their right hand, right? So for a righty, I think this is true, and don't quote me on this, I'm pretty sure I remember this, that that you for a righty, you put your right on, then you put your left on, and then you tie your left, and then you tie your right. But for a lefty, you put on your right, you put on your left, and then you tie your right, and you tie your left. Because for that person personally, that's how they do tefillin. I think that's true. Again, don't quote me on it. So good question. There's a lot of back and forth, and it comes up in a lot of halachic scenarios. And it oftentimes comes down to, are we looking at universal strength, or are we looking at personal strength? So those are just a couple of examples of that. But what's interesting about this Gemara specifically is how the Levush categorizes the halacha, right? The Levush, interesting history with the Levush in terms of his creation of what would have been a Shulchan Aruch if it wasn't for Rav Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Isserles that came right afterwards. But Rav Mordechai Yaffe writes this book, the Levush. It's a little bit more explanatory. It's a little bit more lengthy than the Shulchan Aruch, which is why it probably fell out of prominence. But we still have it. We still reference it. We still, you know, use it for certain ideas, and it probably still influences Pesach in some ways. But Rav Mordechai Yaffe says the following. He says, "Kishayin al kishay." In source number 4, "Kishayin ol min alav." When you put on your shoes, "im he min alim she'enam tzrichin kshira." If they're type of shoes that don't have any ties to them, "yin ol shel yamin tchil." You put your right shoe on. "Shekin matzina lo olam b'torah." "Shahay yamin chashuva." The right is universally significant. "Kigon le'inen bo'en yad u'bo'en ragel." Right by the Kohen, different things that the Kohen has to do. Linen chalitza, yivama, shechotzin biyamin. When you do your chalitza, you do it with the right. Ve'im he min alim shetzrichim kshira. If they're types of shoes that require some kind of strapping, some kind of tying together. Yin ol shel yamin tchila velo yikshirenu. You put on your right foot, you put on your right shoe, and you do not tie it. Ve'achar kach yin ol shel small yikshirenu tchila. And then you put it on your left and you tie it. First, mishum degabe inyan kashira matzina b'torah da'achshav asmol. When it comes to wrapping things, so we find that the Torah gives significance to the left, kigon b'kshiras tefillin, just like with your tefillin. Hold on. V'ayin v'od nirali, the beginning of the next line, tam hagun, interesting way of phrasing it, he says, I've got a good reason for why this is the case. And he quotes this Gemara in source number 3, from source number 3. He says, Midarmin per kisoy hadam, bischar she'amar avram imichut v'yatzroch na'al. Or he quotes from source number 2. Right, source number 3 is the actual halacha. But he quotes from source number 2 to justify source number 3. Zachu banu l'shtei mitzvos, l'chutin shel mitzvos tzitzes u'ritzu shel tefillin. Right, when Avram Avinu says that I'm not going to take a shoelace, that merited him to get tefillin. Lekach, says the Levush, lekach madminan, kshiras hana'olam, kshiras tefillin. We make a connection, we make a parallel between shoelaces and tefillin. Kev and da'ayideh sroch na'al zachul behen, because it was through this shoelace that Avram Avinu brought tefillin to his descendants. V'kev and da'kshiras tefillin he tchila b'yad small, and therefore, because one tefillin is done on the left hand first, v'achar kachu kosher, as shall rosh berosho, then you put a tefillin on the head. Shehu notel tzad yamin yado hasmalit. Okay, whatever that means. That the head is closer to the right side. I don't know. Kain yi yekshiras nal hasmal gam kain tchila v'achar kachikshar. I mean, first and foremost, you put on your left. You tie your left shoe, and then only afterwards do you tie your right shoe. Very interesting Levush that connects this concept of Avram Avinu to the concept of how to put your shoes on. So we find, therefore, that there is a strong connection, not only in a thematic sense, in terms of it being a binding agent, right? These two straps or these two, tying mechanisms, but also in terms of a halachic sense. Says that the Levush says that we have this halacha, we have this whole concept of putting on your left shoe, your right, then your left, then you're tying your left first, based on Avram Avinu. So at least halachically, we view this as a very strong connection. But now let's understand what it might represent in terms of who Avram Avinu was. And for that, we're going to go into a statement from the Netziv. The Netziv has a fascinating take on what this means, and it's based on a Medrash. He says the following in source number 5. Yesh lehit bonein. Let's try to figure this. Let's try to understand this. Lehit bonein, to understand. Kol prate mashalim halalu. All of these analogies, right? That the fact that Avram Avinu says a string or a thread or a shoelace. Vihine chazal chulin daf peites, which we saw darshu shazach Avram Avinu avorzeh halashon chut shel tcheilus ritzur shel tefillin. Right? And the Netziv says he married it, as we just saw, the thread of tchilas and the straps of tefillin. The ha'inyan, which is his introductory word to say, this is how we're going to explain this concept. The isa bebereishis rabba periklamates achos lanu ketana, a drasha based on another pasuk, ze Avram Avinu, she'icha et kol ba'i olam. Icha is an interesting word. Icha means to sew together. I believe that the literal translate is to stitch. Let me see for a second. I believe the translation is to stitch. Let me see. Icha. To sew together, to knit together, to piece together, to bring two things together, right? That's the point. So he says, She'icha es kol bayi olam. Avram Avinu brought people together in the world. I don't know who this is. Ben, I don't know who this is. I have an Netziv here. I feel bad not quoting it properly. This is Yud Dalid Chaf Gimel. Hold on. Doesn't say it here either. Bez Kuf. I don't know who it is. Either way, so Bez Kuf Omer, Kazeh Shehu Ma'ach Es Hakera. Just like a person who not only sews things together, not only stitches things together, but he stitches together that which has already been torn apart. That's very interesting. Something's been torn, and he's sewing them back together. And says the Netziv, "V'hu al pi de'isa od sham perik yutes ikar shchina ha'isa batachtonim," that Hashem's presence itself was in the world, was right. You know, as the pasuk implies in Bereishis, that Hashem was hovering over Gan Eden. Kevan shechata Adam harishon. However, once Adam harishon sinned, nistalka, Hashem's shchina removed itself from the world. Ad Sheba Avram Avinu Vehecha Lahorida, and he was beginning to bring Hashem's presence back into the world, right? The world had lost a certain sense of Hashem, and Avram Avinu, through his teaching of monotheism, brought Hashem's presence back down to the world. Nimsa says in the Netziv, a beautiful understanding of it, Tachlis Shlemus Habriya Haya Sheyiyu Mechubarim. The whole purpose of creation was therefore to bring Shemayim v'aretz together. Sheyiyu mechubarim Shemayim v'aretz b'hashkacha. With a certain divine oversight, right? That the purpose of man is to bring Hashem into the world al pi hamasim, through a person's deeds. Ella, however, shenikara al pi hachet. That connection of Hashem being in the world can also be severed, right? When a man, when people sin, it brings Hashem's presence a little further away. It brings Shemayim a little further from Aretz. Says the Netziv, Uba Avram Avinu, the Tafar Es Hakera. Avram Avinu came and stitched it back together. Hashem had been removed from the world. Avram Avinu pulls Hashem back down and starts to tie it together, Right, he starts to connect Avram Avinu back into the Avram Avinu starts to connect Hashem back into the world. The Tafar Sakara Umemela Icha Bezes Kol HaOlam, and thereby he is also connected the whole world. Gimel Israel. Okay, he's making another drasha based on the Gemara there. Ubereshes Rab Peraklamates Afil Sfinus Hamefarshel Siamagado. Fine, Vihine. Mashihigia mipalas mapalas hamalachim ayide Avram Avinu haya ayide shnei devarim. Avram Avinu was able to be successful at conquering these other kings through two things. Echad ayide rube tzidkosav, first because of his righteousness, shezach lios ma'achas akara, which itself was what was able to connect to restitch that tear, right? The division between Shemayim and Baretz, right? He was righteous and therefore brought Hashem back down into the world. Vishenis, I don't know why it says like Vishenis Ayidei Sheheir Tzedek Veradaf Achrayim, that he was showing and exemplifying his righteousness and tried to chase after. Debeloza lo negru val shnei devarim halalu amro she'en mevakish schar mibal hagmul yisbarach lo al achud shetafar sakara v'lo al sruch nal sheradaf achrayim. Says the Netziv, you know what these two phrases mean? Chut and sruch nal are a reference to the fact that Avram Avinu on the one hand restitched the Shemayim v'aretz together. That's the thread. That's the tcheles. To bring the world, to bring Shemayim back into Aretz. As we know, Rashi tells us, although he doesn't explain it here, this is sort of my addition to the Netziv, Rashi tells us that the tcheles, the blue in the string of the tzitzis, is supposed to remind you of Hashem himself, right? It brings your mind to the sea, it brings your mind to think of the ocean, and that ocean reminds you that it's reflecting the heavens, and that heavens is reminding you of Hashem. So again, you have within tcheles, within the thread that's connecting Shemayim v'aretz, you have the concept of bringing the world into the Kisei HaKavod, as Rashi tells us at the end of Parsha Shlach. Should have quoted it here. I should have, not the Netziv. Virak me ava hineni oved vahinu ksheba yeshayo mem aleph loso inin amar viata Yisrael avdi zera Avram ohavid veoso masahera Avram sheoved me ava blomishum gemul vayibaze dibro lamelech stom the achar sheini mevakish star mekadosh baruch hu. He goes into more thing. I don't know why I cut it off here. Says the Netziv that the thread which creates the tzitzis and the shoelace, which is also itself a representation of Avram Avinu chasing after righteousness, right, with his shoes. Those are all representative of Avram being Me'acha Es Hakera, connecting Shemayim V'aretz, bringing Hashem's presence back down into the world, in a world where Avram Avinu around him sees everyone doing things which are ungodly, things that are sort of separating Hashem from the world, bringing him, making him distant. Avram Avinu brings Hashem back in, and he ties it together. Me'ache es hakera. He stitches Hashem back into the world by promoting the concept of monotheism. I want to take this in a bit of a different turn, because I want to sort of zoom out a little bit. When we think of Avram Avinu, right? Oftentimes we think of Avram Avinu as this great innovator, right? He's the bringer, the introducer of monotheism into the world. And in many ways that's true, because obviously there were people around him that weren't doing it, and now he's introducing it to them. But the way that the Netziv is explaining it is, while Avram Avinu is changing the status quo, he's not creating something anew, right? He's not, as they say, recreating the wheel. Right, he's rather reinstituting a reality that already existed. Avram Avinu is not creating something new as much as he is reestablishing the original world order. Originally, when Hashem created the world, Hashem's presence was supposed to be here. Hashem was supposed to be interactive with the world itself. We were supposed to have this close connection. Hashem was hovering over Gan Eden. And then because of Adam Arishon, he was separated. And ever since then, we have the door of the Mabul and the door of the Haflaga, and we have the generation of Avram Avinu. And all of a sudden, Hashem is distant from the world. Comes along Avram Avinu and says, we have to repair the world. It's not that I am creating a new reality of monotheism, but rather I am reestablishing the original world order, which is that Hashem was here, and now I'm bringing him back. This is very different than how many people think of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu started a religion. He didn't start the religion. He reinstituted the religion that was originally supposed to be in the world, and was in the world. Right? As the Netziv is explaining, he's Me'ache Es Hakera. Right, represented by this phrase from Avraham Avinu, "Im michut v'yatzroch nal." I'm not creating something new. I'm just reattaching things with this shoelace or with this thread. What I think about this now is that Avraham Avinu is using not only the thread and the shoelace as representative of retying things together, but it's also, in a way, a maintaining of what already exists. If you think about tefillin, and you think about shoes, shoelaces. So the tefillin is binding our arm, right? It's restricting our arm. It's keeping our arm in place. It's limiting mobility. It's sort of protecting the arm. Right, in a sense, when you bind the arm, it's restricting things from changing. Right, it's maintaining what is. Right, that's what binding means. When you tie something together, it's keeping it together. And similar with a shoelace, when you're tying your shoelaces together, it's keeping the shoe on your foot. It's not creating something new as much as it is maintaining the status quo or maintaining what's supposed to be. The shoe is supposed to be on the foot. We want to keep it that way. Right, that's the whole point. The point is not to do something new as much as it is to protect what is already existent. There is a beautiful idea that comes up in the brachos in the morning. I don't know if people are familiar with this, but the brachos that we say in the morning, right? The brachos of, you know, Pokeach Ivrim and Matir Asurim and you know, all the other ones, HaMechin Mitzadei Gaver, Ozer Yisrael B'Gvura, all these brachos are actually, originally, they were said in conjunction with certain activities. According to the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Samach, you can see in source number 6, each one of the brachos had to do with something when you wake up in the morning, right? So when you would wake up in the morning and you would sit up, you would say the bracha, Zokev Kefufim, right? Hashem who makes straight those who are bent over, right? You Zokev Kefufim, you can sit straight up. And Pokeach Ivrim is when you wipe your eyes, right? When you open your eyes for the first time, right? So all these brachos had something. So what is it then? The bracha she'asa li kol tzarki, that Hashem gives me all that I need. So the Gemara says, ki sayim masanei lema barach she'asa li kol tzarki. When a person puts on their shoes, you say the bracha she'asa li kol tzarki. By the way, an oldie but a goodie here, I had a Rebbe once tell me, what bracha do you make on Thanksgiving? So the bracha is she'asa li kol tzarki. You make a turkey. Anyways. Shazali Kotsarki. You can say that one at your Thanksgiving table. So here in the bracha here of putting on your shoes is Shazali Kotsarki. Why is that the bracha which is said by your shoes? What's so special about shoes that it represents the need, fulfilling all your needs? So if you think about all of your clothing for a second, all of your clothing benefits from the from gravity and from sort of laying on something else, right? Your shirt lays on your shoulders and then it lays down. Your pants can be tied around your waist and then it just falls down and it stays there. The shoe, however, is not put on something and then goes down. It's put on your foot and then has to stay up, right? It's on the bottom of your body. Not only that, because of that, it doesn't have the benefit of laying on something or being tied around something like your waist. So when it comes to, when it comes to a shirt, you can get a baggy shirt and it still will fit, right? You can still wear a baggy shirt. You can get baggy pants and it'll still fit. You can't get shoes that are too small though. You can't get shoes that are too big. A shoe will fall off or it won't fit at all. The shoe, as Cinderella tells us, has to fit just right. The shoe is exactly proportionate to your foot. If it's not, if it's too big, it'll fall off. If it's too small, it won't go on your foot. Your shirt can be baggy. Your pants can be baggy. But your shoe can't be baggy. It'll fall off. So when it comes to the shoes, specifically when we put on shoes, we say to Hashem, you've given me exactly what I need. What you've given me is perfect for what my life requires. Right? That it fits my life perfectly. And that's when we say, She'asali kol tzarki, Hashem, you've given me everything I need. I don't need any less, and I don't need any more. And that potentially is the same message that Avram Avinu is saying here. When we tie our shoes, when we use a shoelace, we're maintaining what we have. We're not getting less, and we're not getting more. We are satisfied with what we have. If you look at another part of davening, so we say at the beginning of Shemona Esrei, Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagen, Baruch Ata Hashem Magen Avraham. Right, this is source number 8. I just quoted source number 7, which might reference this. But source number 9, at the beginning of the Parsha, Chazal say explicitly that V'heye Bracha, Rashi says, HaBrachos Nesunos B'yadcha. All of the brachos will be given to you, right? When Hashem says Lech Lecha, you're going to be given a lot of blessing. Ad Achshav Hayu B'yadi. Until now, Hashem has kept the brachos. Beirachti LaAdam V'Noach. I gave bracha to Adam and to Noach. Umei Achshav Atat Tevarech Asher Tachbots. Now, Avram Avinu, you're going to give brachos. That's the first way Rashi says it. Davar Acher. Another way of understanding the benefits that Avram's going to get if he goes on this Lech Lecha journey. Ve'eschal goy gadol, ze she'omrim Elokei Avraham. I'm going to make you into a great nation. That's when we say Elokei Avraham in Shemona Esrei. Ve'avarech echa, and I will bless you. Ze she'omrim Elokei Yitzchak. That's representative, the bracha is representative of Yitzchak. Ve'agad lashem echa, and your name will become great. Ze she'omrim Elokei Yaakov. That's why we say in Shemona Esrei, the God of Jacob. Yachol Yehu Chosmin Bechulan. Maybe since each of these references a different one of the avos, maybe you're going to say that the end of the bracha should include all of the avos. Talmud Lomar Veheye Bracha. It shall be a bracha. Becha Chosmin Velo Bahem. It's through you, Avram Avinu, that the bracha will end, and not through them. Based on the pasuk meaning of Parsha, says Rashi Sechazal, that we end our bracha, the bracha of Avos, the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, perhaps the most important bracha to have kavana and intention for, Baruch Ata Hashem Magen Avraham. Blessed is Hashem, the protector of Avraham. So first, two things. Number one, this is a bracha which is different from all other brachas. Because the Haganah of Avraham, the protection of Avraham, is something which happened in the past. If you think about all the brachas of Shemona Esrei, Rofei Cholim, Rofei Cholim, we have Mevarech Hashanim, we have Bonei Yerushalayim, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua, right? All of these things are things that we hope to happen right now to us. Hashem, heal the sick. Hashem, give us blessing for sustenance. Hashem, rebuild Yerushalayim. Hashem, bring about the Yeshua, bring about salvation. All of those things happen right now. But this bracha, Magen Avraham, Hashem is the protector of Avraham, that happened thousands of years ago. Why are we making a bracha about Magen Avraham? That's question number one, we'll get to in a second. Question number two is, what does Magen mean? If you look at source number 8, so there are three different verbs. Melech Ozer, Moshia, Umagen. And yet we focus on the Magen. The Magen is different from Ozer and Moshia. The word Ozer means to help. The word Ozer means that I am in a difficulty right now. I need help right now. There's something going on right now that is hard. I need to change what's going on right now. That's Ozer. Moshia means I cannot win it myself. Hashem has to completely save me. I need salvation. I'm in a difficult spot. I need salvation. Those two are very different than Magen. Ozer and Moshia imply a certain challenge that Hashem is now solving. Magen is not solving any challenges. It's rather protection. What does protection mean? Think about, you know, a policeman guarding the shul. Think about someone who's watching over somebody else. There's nothing happening right now, but rather they're protecting the status quo. They're conserving what the reality already is. And if we think back at what the Netziv said, and the way that I understood it is, that just like when we tie our shoes, we say, Sha'asali kol tzarki, what we're saying to Hashem is, Hashem, I want to maintain what I already have. I want to maintain what I have. I don't need any more. I don't need any less. I don't need anything new. I don't want anybody else to start something new. I want to have what I already have. I'm satisfied with what I have. And this is the same, I think, the same message that might be included within Magen Avraham. It's not that I need Hashem to be Moshiach right now. I don't need him to change things. The bracha of Magen Avraham is to appreciate what we have right now. It's to appreciate what we have and to maintain what we have. That's implied by the word Magen, to protect. And this is presumably also the meaning of binding things together, of Avram Avinu bringing not a new reality of Hashem, but bringing back the reality of Hashem, to reintroduce the original world order of Hashem being part and parcel of the world. Getting back to that first question, however, the Chidush Harim, Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter of Pshischa, right, student of Rav Simcha Banim, he asks that question that we said before. Magen Avraham is talking about Avram Avinu from thousands of years ago. Why is it that we have to, that why is that that our Baruch Shemoneh Esrei remembers Avram Avinu? That war happened so long ago. What does it have to do with us now? It's not like any other Baruch Shemoneh Esrei. Says the Chidush Harim, I saw this once from Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Zecher Tzadok Levracha, passed away a few months ago from COVID. Says the Chidush Harim in source number 10, Ve'aschal goy gadol v'gomer, Zeh she'omrim elokei Avram, Chachos v'magin Avram, perish, Habracha magen Avraham, Shalom atzinu bracha al nes she'avar rak al hanoeg tamid. The only things that we ever see is the things that the only things that we make brachas on are things that are, can be done right now. But this is in the past. Ulam Hashem yisparach yivtiach la'avram avinu al v'shalom. What does that mean? What is Hashem? What is Hashem guaranteeing Avram Avinu? What does Rashi mean when he says that we make a bracha of Magen Avram? Yashir me'oso hanekuda hapnimius Yisrael, bepnimius Yisrael. That when we say Magen Avram, what we really mean is not only did Hashem protect Avram Avinu, but even nowadays Hashem protects that semblance of Avram Avinu in all of us. Bepnimius Yisrael banav, v'yes hanekuda hazos. This one little pintle yid inside of all of us will endure. That's when we magen Avram. We ask Hashem to protect that Avram Avinu inside all of us. Lo yikalkel adam la'olam. A person will never go so far off the registration that they'll lose that Avram Avinu inside of them. V'yal hanekuda hazos, Hashem yisparach magen tamid. It's that specific reality that Hashem maintains our little piece of Avram Avinu inside of us at all times. It's not going to change. It's not going to become more. It's not going to become different. We will always have that Avram Avinu because maybe Avram Avinu wasn't as much a innovator as he was a reestablishment of the previous world order, like the Netziv says. There's something about this that I usually talk about in terms of Yitzchak Avinu, who himself was a bridge from Avram to Yaakov. I spoke about it a little bit wrote about it a little bit in one of my drashas, I think on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But it's something that I think is important to keep in mind, and that is the satisfaction or the I don't want to use the word complacent, has negative connotations, but I what I mean is that you're proud of what you have on a spiritual level, that you're okay maintaining what you're doing. It's okay to say the same words of davening every day. It's okay to go to the same shir every day. It's okay to have, you know, the same brachas every day. Right, oftentimes you'll find that people in other non-Orthodox movements feel the need to change liturgy or to change how you do things. I saw really, I don't want to get political, but oftentimes non-Orthodox streams find meaning in politics. I saw this one video for a couple seconds of, I think it was probably a Reformed temple that broadcast that they were making a new Haftorah. They made a new Haftorah. What was this Haftorah? I don't know if people saw this. I don't recommend watching it, but it's pretty startling to see. They made a Haftorah about a modern-day prophet. Who was this modern-day prophet? None other than Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I have no comments about Ruth Bader Ginsburg right now. But what was it? In their Shabbos morning services, they created a Haftorah just with tunes and everything that repeated phrases that Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. Because for them, in order to make something meaningful, it has to be new. It has to be different. It has to be exciting. It has to be innovative. Avram Avinu was not trying to be innovative when he brought the world to monotheism. What he was rather doing was reestablishing what should have been there all along. And we too have to have the comfort of maintaining things, finding significance and finding purpose in maintaining our traditions, not necessarily finding new ways to do it, finding, you know, innovations that will make it new and exciting so that people will think about it in different ways. Right? I remember in Kansas, there was a shul, not a shul, a temple. They were starting a new thing in Shabbos morning services. They're going to have yoga services. They would pray as they were doing yoga. So that's just a cheap gimmick. That's not real prayer. When what's bringing you to shul is yoga and not the words of speaking to Hashem, so then that's not real prayer at all, right? And all of these things are just an attempt to make things new and exciting because it's too difficult for people to maintain the original world order, right? To maintain what Yiddishkeit really is. And therefore, it's a very important thing to realize that when we say Magen Avraham, when we say that Hashem should protect Avram Avinu, maintain that original sort of fervor of Avram Avinu, what we're saying is that we're keeping things the same way. We're not necessarily feeling the need to make something new and different, to have a new hot take, to have a new chiddush, have a new thing. Judaism is about doing the things the same way, just as Avram Avinu did them, just as Yitzchak Avinu, just as Yaakov Avinu. We put on tefillin every day. We tie our shoes the same way every day. We bind things as if to say they should be kept that way. They should stay that way. Sha'as ali kol tzarki. I don't need anything new. I don't need anything different. I'm okay with the way that my Judaism is, and I find meaning in the way that it is and always has been. And when we can understand that, we can understand what Avram Avinu really was saying, according to the Netziv, in his messaging to Melech Sodom, and we also understand what it means to maintain our Yiddishkeit, to maintain the mitzvahs that we do, find meaning in the things that we always do, but not feel the need to change them or to make them different. And hopefully through that, we'll find meaning in no matter what it is that we do in our mitzvahs. Okay, Shkayach, that's Avram Avinu in a different light than maybe you're used to.
Thank you.